and welcome back to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. We've got an exciting show today talking about Alzheimer's, dementia, and what used to be known as senility. We have a special guest today, but I want to remind everyone that you are listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial. You could email us at mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com. Visit us anytime you like. Send us your inputs. Rob can't be with us today, so Joe's taking his place, which we are so grateful for, especially for such an interesting discussion he's about to say. And what we're going to talk about today is really, what is dementia? What is Alzheimer's? And what is cognitive decline? Number one. Number two, some breaking news about what's been going on in the field. Number three, Joe's going to tell us his personal story in addressing this condition with his family and as a caretaker and as well as a professional in a number of capacities, professional caretaker, but also as a professional writer. And thirdly, we're going to talk about some ideas for caretakers, what to do with somebody who's got various condition. And we're just going to be talking some thoughts about the idea. We're not here to be definitive. We're just here to get your brain going, think of some ideas, talk about things. So, Joe, introduce yourself and tell us why you're here today.
Well, my name is Joe Gass, and I've been exposed to dementia from different realms, from a personal family situation with my mother, who had a condition for over a decade. I've also worked in hospital settings as a kind of a social worker, a case manager, and also as a rehabilitation specialist in a rehabilitation hospital where we saw patients with dementia at times.
And you're a professional writer who writes about medical issues.
Well, yeah, I work for a communications company, and we do sometimes cover dementia. So, yeah, I've been exposed to it in that capacity as well.
So a number of interesting perspectives to look at this issue.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we'll eventually talk about, I wanted to share with, is the Alzheimer's Association is the main advocacy organization in the country. And every year they put out a facts and figures report. And what I just wanted to share was what this year's facts and figures report focused on, because there is some interesting information specifically to Iowa.
So we're going to deal. So let's start off with the breaking news, and then we'll talk about what is actually Alzheimer's.
Sure. So basically, the report that I mentioned has some interesting findings this year. One of them is that patients aren't being diagnosed. About 45% of the patients are getting a diagnosis early enough in time, and that's kind of a problem. And that's they describe it as that's how cancer used to be 60 years ago, is that the doctor was kind of hesitant to give a patient a diagnosis because they were afraid of their emotional reaction. And it's, kind of ridiculous when you think of it from the perspective of cancer. But so they did some research and they found out that actually that doesn't, getting a diagnosis of dementia doesn't actually give patients long-term depression or anything like that. So I guess they're trying to create awareness around that issue and increase, encouraging physicians and those in the field to not be hesitant, not be afraid to let patients know, because you're doing the patient a service. Then they can start planning and dealing with legal and financial issues and pursuing lifelong goals, things like that. So it's really it's a disservice. And anyway, so that was one of the focus.
But why would that matter? So why would it matter if you have dementia? You have dementia. So why does it matter if it's later or not? What's the point of catching it early?
There's a lot of value. Basically, you can start, like I said, just with planning from one perspective. But you could get yourself involved in a clinical trial. You could do things, it's not proven, but there's a lot of evidence suggesting that your lifestyle can help you possibly delay onset. Just keeping your brain active. They recommend things like playing chess and having mental stimulating games, maybe trying to learn a new language. And keeping healthy otherwise. They say that the Japanese and the Mediterranean diet, and I'm sure the Ayurvedic diet, which is focused on, is anti-inflammatory based, would be beneficial as well.
But this also gets into the other question of what is Alzheimer's versus dementia, because the terms kind of get conflated and you don't know really what you're talking about. And having dementia doesn't necessarily mean you have Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. There could be a number of causes for Alzheimer's, or for dementia, that is. And you might have cognitive decline, might have nothing to do with you actually having Alzheimer's. And there's a lot you could do to make a difference in your life and the life of people you love.
True. Yeah, you could have something like a long-term sleep deprivation, depression, which could appear as you know, like a, as you describe, cognitive decline. But and there are also other, and so that would be something that, you know, if you could identify, would be reversible. Another type of dementia that's reversible is a vitamin deficiency and alcohol abuse. It's rare, but it happens. Another type of dementia. So basically, to talk about the language.
And also another issue that you could have dementia from a stroke, mm-hmm. which might be recoverable with, we call it in the field, neuroplasticity. The fact that your brain isn't solid. The fact that your brain still does change. So a misnomer that people had many years ago, well, still some really do, is that the brain can change. As soon as you, you know, are a certain way, that's it. You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah, that's right. So if we could just focus on the language for a second, the old term that was used many years ago was senility. Mm. And what the medical community would like to do is make that an obsolete term. And now the umbrella general term is dementia. Underneath that umbrella, the most common form of dementia, 60% to 80%, is Alzheimer's disease. And so that's why you'll hear the terms interchanged a lot. People might just be using it for simplicity's sake to say that, you know, Alzheimer's to speak to dementia. But there's other kinds, as you mentioned. The second most common is the vascular dementia from strokes. And to start to weave into my mother's story, she had something called frontotemporal dementia, which is a rare form, but and that has to do with a different disease process. Basically, it has to do with degeneration of cells in specific lobes, the frontal and parietal lobes of the brain.
So she didn't actually have Alzheimer's?
Correct.
But it's the same kind of thing? Tell us the difference.
Right.
Like, how would somebody know, and given what she had, could her quality of life be improved?
Right. So it's there's probably just subtle nuances in the differences in their behavior. You can't really know what's going on in their head. So, for example, my mother may have not had memory loss, but she lost her ability to speak and express herself. So we wouldn't know. And then sometimes, occasionally, things would trigger her long-term memory and her eyes would light up and things like that. But with even within Alzheimer's, there's different types. Men sometimes have a more agitated type. They might get more aggressive or violent. My mother's was a pleasant type. So if you could describe, you know, she was pleasantly demented, you could say, and she liked to sing and dance. So we were
literally?
Fortunate. Yes.
Wow, that's
cool. You put on some oldies and she would get up and she'd be smiling. And yeah, it was kind of it was cute.
But, you know, that actually brings up an interesting point. There was a wonderful movie that I saw, about a year ago. Do you remember it? Where they were talking about listening. They would go to a nursing home and somebody had some form of dementia of some sort, some cognitive decline, and they would put on music and they give them a headset, and it had to be specific to their condition. And the music specific to something that they remember. So if they're from the 20s and they like big band or whatever it would be, and if they played that music and they had them on their heads, they would all of a sudden come to life. And it wasn't just like the Robin Williams movie, the one
Awakenings.
Yeah. But it was also this sense that they could cognitively start thinking again. It would like trigger for them to actually have memory.
Ah, so it like found a pathway.
The pathway was through music. And it makes sense if we think about how the brain is structured, that sometimes alternative pathways really do make a huge difference. And so instead of this dreaded feeling, oh, somebody has some form of cognitive decline, oh my God, the world's coming to an end, you know, take the dog out and shoot him. It's like, no, lifestyle really does make a difference. And lifestyle could include anything from exercise, meditation, diet, sleep, but it could also mean personal music. Where it would really, I'm so sorry, I can't remember the name. It was such a wonderful movie, but I'm sure you could look that up. And it's really finding what avenue works for that person.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes smell is also another avenue, which
I'm
bypasses.
Sure if somebody was a cook or a baker, I bet.
Well, not only that, but deep limbic system, which controls emotion sometimes, could be influenced by smell. Deep limbic system is like a primal brain,
mm-hmm.
where we get into that fight or flight kind of thing. So for anxiety issues, that's become a pleasant smell can help with some anxiety. So, but there's a number of ways. And so the main point of all of our discussions is don't give up. Look for new possibilities. Don't listen to one doctor. Don't listen to one website. For God's sake, don't listen to everything on the web. And really get, try and explore. Don't be, as I called it, a lazy thinker, but as even more last week's show, be a courageous thinker.
Mm-hmm. I've heard the term resigned fatalism. I think that's something that describes people that just sort of give up early and think it's their worst case scenario is going to happen.
Yeah. And instead, no, let's look at what possibly. So tell us about your personal story.
So my mother started showing signs early on that were, you know, sometimes we just said, oh, it's just mom being mom, and we could write things off because she was silly sometimes. But when she was got to certain things, like she wasn't able to sign her name. Mm. She had told my uncle that she lost the ability to do math. So she still had awareness, and she's very high level functioning. You know, I would take her for a walk, and we would go out. You know, she could walk 2 miles easy and not break a sweat.
Mm.
So, still, you know, high functioning, and that went on for years, many years. She, like I said, she was over a decade, maybe 12 or more years with the condition. And eventually it does get worse. She had to be on hospice care, but my father was such a great caretaker. She actually was on and off hospice. He would, you know, she would be so well cared for, she would get better and get off of hospice.
Wow.
So it was kind of like, I think she was like 4 or 6 times on
wow,
and off hospice.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was crazy.
You never think about that. You mm-hmm. think you're going to hospice, that's it.
Right, yeah. So
another reason to not give up.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, on one occasion, they were still living in Philadelphia, and she was on hospice, and we thought that, you know, that was going to be the end. And then next thing you know, a year later, they moved to Arizona, and being there added years to their life, you know, the quality of life and the sunshine and getting out and exercising. Because she was very hypersensitive to, like, with driving. You couldn't drive because it was too stimulating to have something go fast by her, you know, by her eyes. If it was just the slightest bit windy or raining, she wouldn't walk outside. Mm. So Arizona's ideal weather was great because she got out and exercised more, and that helped a lot with her.
And so there was things that you could do.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like your family really grouped together, really came together, you and your dad, to really rally around trying to make a difference here.
Yep.
And you kept trying to explore different possibilities. And she didn't just go gently into that good night. She really lived, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, towards the end, even though towards the end she had to be in a wheelchair, she went to Vegas in a wheelchair.
I mean, really?
Yes.
Seriously?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's...
Did she win anything?
I don't think so. I think she played. She just was pushed around. But still, I mean, yeah. She enjoyed the sightseeing. And
so sometimes the too much noise or sound or movement didn't affect her. Or was it all those, like a vestibular, where you'd have noise and sound and movement would... Or is it just simply external movement? Was that just the only one that really hit her?
Well, it was everything that whatever bothered her or pleased her was inconsistent. So that was one problem, because if she was upset about something or agitated and we couldn't figure out what was going on, you know, it's almost like a baby. You don't know if they're, you know, what their needs are exactly. So music didn't always work, you know, but sometimes it worked. So it was hard to know exactly what stimulation would affect her in what way. It wasn't consistent enough.
Thank you, Joe. By the way, you're listening to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. And we also run the Fairfield Mental Health Alliance. Please be part of it. Be part of the solution, not the problem, as they say. Be part of what you're wanting to see created here and elsewhere. I also run the Art and Counseling Center. throughout Chicagoland, throughout all of Illinois, actually. We've just expanded, and Iowa. But we're here to make a difference. We're hoping you want to make a difference in your life today. And today we're talking about Alzheimer with Joe, who's been integral to the Fearful Mental Health Alliance and making a difference here. And we're talking about a specific type of dementia, the main type of dementia, which is Alzheimer's, but that's not, again, all dementia. And Joe was in the middle of his personal story, which I want to get back to, about his mother and how you and your father really tried to make a difference. So what were some other things you guys did that you find worked and what didn't work?
Just basically being there. There weren't specific things. I had three sisters and they would chip in and help as well. So that was back in Philadelphia. We would trade off. So my father was able to go to not just any support group, but there's actually a specific frontotemporal support group.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, well, this is in a population dense area in Philadelphia and he had to drive like an hour to get there. But one night a month, he was able to talk with people about this specific condition, because to go to an Alzheimer's support group would have been helpful, but here they can talk about the nuances and the differences with.
Are there online support groups too if somebody's isolated in a rural community?
Yes. There's the Alzheimer's Association is a great platform to start.
What is that association?
The Alzheimer's Association, the website is alz.org.
So A is in Apple, L is in Larry, Z is in Zebra.
Mm-hmm.
www.alz.org.
That's correct. And it is the nation's largest advocacy group for patients of not just Alzheimer's, but all dementias. But they have resources. If you go to their website and look for the area that has the zip code, to type in your zip code, that's going to connect you to your local chapter. And through that, you'll be able to find either live support groups or they have message board support groups as well. So there's all sorts of options out there. We're located in Southeast Iowa right here. And there's not a specific Alzheimer's support group in our town, but in Ottumwa, the neighboring community, there is one that meets once a month. But you can find those types of details and those types of resources on the Alzheimer's Association's website.
And you think there's also online support in terms of if I can't even get there, wherever I'm listening, that maybe there's some online community
right
to address.
Exactly, through message boards. Or there might be other more sophisticated means, but I'm not sure about those.
Okay.
I'm sure they exist.
So you work together as a family to try and make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying some of the difficulties with this specific kind of dementia, which is, again, different than necessarily an Alzheimer's dementia, that you working together as a family, not giving up, but looking at what's possible and what's not. But some days, what the hard part would be, just when you think you got something that worked, you know, like music, for example, it might work, but the next day it might not.
Right.
So how do you stay on your toes and deal with that?
Well, it's actually something I learned from working in the hospital setting during our training, a phrase that I'll never forget, unconditional positive regard is what they taught us. And basically that was my attitude with just trying the next thing. You sort of just, it's like you're weaving through obstacles. And so if that thing didn't work, you just sort of weave to the left or right and you find out the next thing that works, whether it's, you know, she loved ice cream. Like, I mean, in fact, one time we were out and she hadn't probably verbalized any words for maybe 2 years. Mm-hmm. And somebody said something about ice cream and she goes, "Oh, ice cream. Yeah." So those are her only words in 2.5 years.
I would do that.
Yeah, exactly. I think pizza might be my key word, but yeah.
Yeah, it's my trigger too. Uh-huh. Ice cream's my little thing.
So, just little things like that. So yeah, food, you know, just basically, you know, trying anything we could think of, you know, knowing her, we knew what she liked and we just tried different things.
So if you were going to give some suggestions to people dealing with this condition, but in general, dealing with any kind of incredible stressor, what happens to a lot of families, and I, again, you really need to think of this as a communal problem. This is not just an individual, mm-hmm. one person dealing with the problem, but a family, a community dealing with this. And one of the things is, again, this notion of not only not giving up, but doing something to actually try to keep moving forward, mm-hmm. being a courageous thinker, creating new possibilities, looking at new ways to look at the system of how you're doing something, not just the details, and not just trying to do the same old thing that you did years before.
Mm-hmm.
And so this really becomes almost like a blueprint for any condition, in a sense.
Sure, yeah.
And so when we're starting to think about how, as it's really fascinating, again, not just to individuals, but as a family, what did you create? And as a caretaker in a hospital, what have you learned that actually works?
Yeah, I mean, there's a broad range of approaches, and I think that those are some good top-level general, you know.
Well, say some more specifics.
I guess, you know, exercise, you know, going for walks was a big thing, because that would carry over for hours afterwards. You know, after a good 1 mile walk around the neighborhood, her behavior and disposition and things like that were just, you know, she was generally in a positive mood. And
so even if things are difficult, would she still go for a walk?
No, it might be hard to get her outside.
Things calm down enough.
Mm-hmm.
But if you caught it early enough, like, hey, it's morning and everybody's awake, let's go for a walk before mm-hmm. things get... And that would make sense, too,
mm-hmm.
that exercise, for instance, in all conditions, you know, it's blood flow to the brain.
Right. Yeah.
So if we think about just as a biomechanical issue, blood flow to the brain is what really makes the difference. It's why I talk about meditation, for instance, as being a really useful tool.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one I specific recommend is the one that's here is Transcendental Meditation. But the reason I recommend it is because that's the one that I've seen most powerfully create blood flow to the brain changes. It's like it have a real neurochemistry shift,
mm-hmm.
which I've seen in many people, from people who have PTSD, who are veterans, to people with autism, to just simple depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the tool is not the answer. The exercise wasn't the only answer, but it's part of a package.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So you included in this package exercise when you could, eating healthy, right?
Right.
What else did you guys do?
We tried, I had been in the hospital setting when I worked. I was exposed to recreational therapy, and that's actually somebody with the degree in recreational therapy.
Mm.
And so here's someone who's, trained to know what games to play with what level of cognitive decline. So basically, that's one of the few things that didn't really work too well. Was I tried arts and crafts and playing games and things like that, and we didn't have too much success with that. But that didn't stop us from trying occasionally.
Was it at least fun for a little bit while you're trying?
Yeah, maybe, but it was
frustrating.
It didn't last too long. And also, she was not interested in that beforehand. She was interested in very elaborate things. She decorated multi-layer wedding cakes.
Oh,
so I think to do something simple was, you know.
So if you had tailored it, like we talked about, tailoring the music to her, what she loved,
mm-hmm.
right? If you would, if I had to mention you played country music, I probably would not be excited. I would probably cringe even if I couldn't speak, because I don't like country music. Right. I'm a guy from Chicago, and I, you know, nothing against country music by any means. For those of you who love it, just not my thing. And so it's kind of like trying to find what's her thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you tailored something, if she had loved puzzles beforehand, maybe,
mm-hmm.
and that's why it's so good to start years and years beforehand. What are you really interested in?
Right.
What really turns you on? And finding that little piece.
Well, now you tell me. See, we could have been me and my dad baking cakes and having her decorate cakes.
Absolutely. Maybe. Hey, and if nothing else, you'd have cakes around. You know?
Yeah, that would... That would have been good.
But, you know, something else that also worked, even if it didn't work, was the fact that you were trying something.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tell people is don't give up.
Right.
Try. If it doesn't work to do, you know, the puzzles, then try doing some art. And if the art doesn't work, you try music. And if the music doesn't work, let's come up with something.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact, I think, and again, tell me if I'm wrong, by the fact that you guys were showing how much you cared and were trying, I think that probably made a difference.
Yeah, that's basically when you have that as a baseline, you're going to come up with ideas. You know, you don't. It doesn't have to be cookie cutter. Okay, try this. Didn't work. Check. Try this. Didn't work. Check. You know, it's just being there and thinking and seeing what's around. And you know, sometimes we had to let go as well because when she was agitated, she would need to pace, and that would not be a good time to try arts and crafts with her if she is frantically pacing for an hour. You just sort of have to let that go and let that work its way out, like a child having a tantrum or something like that.
Well, but the pacing was. What was that about? Was that a self-soothing mechanism, do you think? Or was that her exercise or her just energy just going crazy inside and a frustration?
Yeah, I think it was that. I think it was frustration. You know, I think that she was, for a good while, she still had, she was still with it, to, for lack of a better term, but she couldn't express herself. They call it expressive aphasia when you can't talk.
Yes.
And she couldn't write either, but she could respond appropriately in conversation. Like one time we had an interaction with an old cousin of hers and they were talking about when the bus used to cost a nickel and she would appropriately chime in, say, "Oh yeah." And so it was definitely like she was following the conversation based on her appropriate responses and timing, but couldn't get out the words. Or so I think that's, there was times like that when she had something, maybe she had a need or something to say and couldn't say it, and it got bottled up. And so there were times when, yeah, she was very fidgety and just simply had to pace. So we just had to let that go and let that work itself out.
Well, I can understand that. Mm-hmm. If all of that experience trying to say something and can't remember how to say it, or the way it were proper way, or get too emotional and you're with your partner even and you're trying to like,
sure, yeah, you just know, can't, yeah, I gotta go for a bike ride or can get it out.
right. So it's really about grounding that. So is there anything else you'd like to finish up with? We're almost done with our show. It's amazing because there's so much to talk about, and Joe, you're so fantastic.
Well, thank you. just to touch back on the report that I mentioned earlier, there was just one other thing I wanted to mention because it ties back to Iowa specifically. There's a lot of stats out there about, you know, the trends with Alzheimer's, how it's there's a prevalence increasing, and part of that has to do with the population aging and living longer and more people being old. But specifically in Iowa, I was stunned to read this, that, well, just to throw some numbers out, they estimate 5.3 million Americans have Alzheimer's in the country, 63,000 have in Iowa. Iowa happens to be the largest state of people with Alzheimer's. So wow. I thought that was very interesting to learn that.
Why would that be?
I don't know. But it's just, maybe it's the bacon. I don't know. I just thought that was just an interesting statistic. So it's just, I guess, as Iowans, we ought to be more conscientious and just think of ways we can have a good lifestyle. I know the winters keep us indoors here sometimes. So think of ways to be active and healthy during the cold indoor seasons.
I think that's a great way to end this, and to really think again, to never give up, and to go, how can I create my mind to be as strong as I need it to be? Because if I get the exercise today, it doesn't just have benefits that I feel better today. It that lifestyle change, that sense of being mindful of my body and taking control, carries through throughout your day, throughout your week, throughout your month, throughout your life. And it creates this pattern, whatever it is, that healthy lifestyle does make a difference to your brain. It's all about your brain. Mm-hmm. So doing whatever you can today to protect your brain, to not have traumatic brain injuries from sports or anything else, to do what you can to be powerful in what you need to create for yourself. Everything's for the brain. Thank you, everyone. It was wonderful talking today, Joe. You're great.
Thank you for having me, Scott. You're also great.
Bye.
See ya.